Friends, before this show began, I was in the dressing room and Henny Youngman came in. And he gave me something, this little thing. It's called Henny Youngman's Pocket Jester. In which, if you unfold it like a tape measure, you get all kinds of jokes written here on both sides. We would really have a far better show if I gave up my own idea and read all of these jokes. But inasmuch as we are talking about alcoholism, I must read you the first one on here. A drunk put a dime into a parking meter. Then he looked at the meter, and it registered 60. He said, "My heavens, I've lost 100 pounds. I'm not going to ask you if I should go on, because you would say yes. Did you ever hear about the three drunks who came into one of the New York hotels, and they were given rooms on the 45th floor? They went out for the night, came in early in the morning, and were really in a state of amiable incandescence. Now, you should think about that now. It gets good if you think about it. It means all lit up, huh? So, the clerk said, "I'm sorry, the elevators are broken. We can't oblige you men to walk up to the 45th floor. So we've put some cots in the mezzanine. And you can sleep there for the night." First drunk says, "Oh, we don't mind walking up 45 floors. First drunk said, "For the first 15 floors, I'll sing." Second said, "For the next 15, I'll tell funny stories." And the third said, "And for the last 15, I'll tell sad stories." So they started up. First 15 floors, first drunk sang. Next 15 floors, funny stories. They said to the third man, "All right, begin your sad stories." He said, "I forgot the key." Well, this is the funny side, but there's a serious side. I'm not going to say anything about the devil being in a bottle or God in a bottle, but just two or three facts to start with, namely, one out of 16 drinkers at the present time will become alcoholics. 62% of the adult population of the United States consume alcoholic drinks, which is all right. But how much do they consume? The amount of alcohol consumed per person over 14 years of age is 46 gallons a year per person. Whew. Why did we call this program "The Alcoholic Is Not a Pig"? Because there's so many dirty names that are used against alcoholics. That's one reason. Maybe another reason is that, say, an alcoholic is like a pig because he can't be cured until he's killed. We'll skip that, but we say constantly they're bums, they're worthless, they're beyond redemption, have nothing to do with them, and so on and so forth. Now, our thesis is that an alcoholic is not a pig, he is a person. Is alcoholism a disease? Is it? Only in a certain sense. And that's going to be the burden of this particular telecast. If you use the word disease in a very broad sense, then alcoholism is a disease. First of all, alcoholism can be a biological disease, inasmuch as there may result malnutrition, liver trouble, and so forth. Secondly, alcoholism may be also a psychological disease, inasmuch as it induces neuroses, psychosis, abnormal psychological states, and pink elephants. Thirdly, it is also a moral disease. Moral or spiritual disease. Yes, the alcoholic is under compulsion. Scripture uses the word slavery for compulsion. He who sins becomes the slave of sin. It is principally with this aspect of disease that we are going to be concerned. Now, I'm going to, my angel is a spirit. And so, whenever there's anything spiritual on the board, he loves to erase it. We'll give him time to do that and then go back to our subject. Our subject now is it wholly and completely a biological disease? Here are some difficulties in the way of saying that. Here's how it differs from a disease. You take, for example, tuberculosis. Any other kind of disease that may affect, for example, the members, like paralysis. Does one develop paralysis by an act of will? But does not one will to take the first drink? No alcoholic starts simply by having the alcohol poured down his throat. There's an act of a man there. It's a free act. But nobody who has a disease ever takes an injection of that disease. This is the first difference. A drunken pig is not the same as a drunken man. Here there's liberty at the beginning. A second difference is alcoholics are often very sensitive to love and to goodness and to temperance. That is to say, they become angry in the face of someone who would remind them to be temperate. An alcoholic husband, for example, extremely irritated against the wife and the children who beg him to give up that habit. They have a sense of shame. They do not want to be in the presence of good. Like a thief doesn't like to have a searchlight turned on him. So they put up a barrier between themselves and those who are not alcoholics. This sensitiveness towards temperance is not characteristic of a disease. You ever see people with high blood pressure, for example, drawing away from a person with low blood pressure, like myself? No. They don't have any shame. How does this shame get into this excess? If it's just a disease. Something human here, not something animal, not just something purely biological. One of the reasons why Alcoholics Anonymous is so very effective is because it puts alcoholics with former alcoholics, where there is not this sensitiveness, this sense of shame, and it's easier for them to gain an entree into the alcoholic heart and mind. And they work on them as rational beings, not as with diseased people. So we have two reasons why it's not a disease. First of all, because it's a free act at the beginning. Secondly, because there are the psychological acts of a free man, namely deceit, namely shame. But a third reason is that alcoholics are extremely clever in their deceits. First of all, they deny that they are alcoholics. They never drink too much. And then when it comes to hiding the stuff, believe me, they can find more places to hide their alcohol than 10,000 sane, sober men could ever guess at. I know one woman, she used to pull up the drain in the bathroom and lower the bottles on a string. Does a person who's diseased, example, a person with diabetes, hide pills down a drain? There's a little difference here in the way they act. One wife of an alcoholic husband told me she never saw her husband sober in a year and a half in which they lived together. Never once. And she never saw him drink. Now that's something. Being married, living in the same house with a man, and never seeing him touch liquor once. How did he do it? Well, this was the trick. They were wealthy people. And in one of the rooms, there were a number of loving cups arranged on the wall. At night, he would have the butler go in and fill all of these loving cups. So if his wife was in the front room and called him, he would go in, step up on a chair, empty a loving cup, and go in. She never saw him drunk, but he was always drunk. So this peculiar psychological effect of the alcoholic is marks him off from a diseased man. And furthermore, an alcoholic has remorse. Not when he's drunk, but when he sobers up. Dr. Thomas Shipp, who has done much work with alcoholics, was one day given a letter by one of his alcoholic friends. And the letter read, "This is my last will and testament." Now this is therefore an authentic document. Diseased people do not write this kind of a will and testament. I leave to society a wretched character, a wretched example, and a memory that will soon decay. I leave to my parents, during the rest of their lives, as much worry and as much human misery as a human being can bear. I leave to my relatives and friends as much mortification and humiliation as I can thrust upon them. I leave to my fellow workers a job unfinished and poorly performed. I leave to my wife a broken heart, a life of wretchedness and of shame to weep over my premature death. I give to each of my children ignorance, low character, and a remembrance that their father was a brute. Notice that he said he left his wife premature death. Dr. Shipp said that 2 days later he found the man a suicide. If you get a pig drunk, he doesn't have remorse like this. Now, because it is not wholly and completely a disease, or if it be a disease, it has other elements, let me suggest hope. There's a double basis of hope for the alcoholic. Now, the first one is a figure of speech. First of all, every alcoholic has a hole in the head. So have you, so have I. Secondly, there is another factor, namely there is such a thing in the world as a charism. Charism, let me explain it, is what William James, the psychologist of Harvard, described as the saving influence that comes to us from without. That is a charism. Now, what do we mean by a hole in the head? By a hole in the head, we mean that there's always in every single person a certain amount of freedom and liberty. It may be small, but there's a potency there. There's something human. There's a capacity for betterment. Into this hole in the head, there comes this charism, this saving influence that is from the outside, that does not belong to him. The relationship between the two is somewhat like the relationship between the seed and the earth and the sun. The earth has a hole in it. It can receive a seed. A stone cannot, nor can a pig get this charism. There's also the influence of the sun on that seed that's in the earth. An example may clarify this. Some years ago, there was buried in Switzerland an atheist who boasted very much of the fact and had inscribed on his tombstone, or had caused to be inscribed, "There's no resurrection. I'm locked here forever." There was an oak tree nearby, and an acorn fell in between the flat slab and the tombstone. There was enough earth down there to absorb that acorn. And thanks to the potency in the earth, thanks to the light and heat of the sun, the slab burst. He had his resurrection, even though he denied it. Every alcoholic in the world has got a capacity because he's still got some freedom. There's a beachhead on which there can be a Normandy landing. Take the worst kind of alcoholics. You'll find that to be true. Let me give you the example of one who I knew very well. I used to see in this church in London, England, every morning, someone who came in dressed in a dirty old brown suit. When I would open the church door every morning at 6 o'clock, he was there. He would kneel, go to Mass and communion, rather receive communion at about 9 o'clock Mass. And he would stay in church until about 1. Always on his knees, never used a book, never asleep, always in prayer. He would come back in the afternoon at 3, stay there until the church closed. Well, I had seen him for months, and I thought I would test him, and one day I said to him, "Pat, were you always as good as you are now?" "Well," he said, "considering the graces that I received, I probably am worse now than I ever was before." "Well, tell me about yourself." He said, "I have been an alcoholic, had been an alcoholic for years. In fact," he said, "I was so much an alcoholic that I would take off my boots at the pub door and sell them for a drink." "But whenever Lent came around, I would take the pledge and I would keep it for the 40 days. And then I would be drunk again the rest of the year." One day, he said, "when I was at Hyde Park, I said to myself, if I can be good for 40 days, why can't I be good for 40 years? That was easy enough." He said, "I went into Maiden Lane Church, down near Covent Garden. And I went up to the front pew during benediction service. And he said, there came over me an overwhelming passion for drink. Far greater," he said, "than I ever had in my life. And," he said, "if all the temptations of my life were concentrated into one focal moment, they would not have equaled the agony that I went through. And I couldn't stand it." He said, "I ran down the church aisle. As I got to the back, I stumbled up the 3 steps. And I tore my heart out. And I turned around." He said, "I had won the battle. Now," he said, "I live in the same dive I did before. Sometimes I spend all night long praying for these men." This real alcoholic had a hole in his head. He had a capacity for goodness. And there was an unseen influence, a charism that came to him from without. It made him a great and a holy man. No, an alcoholic is not a pig. He's a man. He's made to the image and likeness of God. He's a man of hope.
Bishop King will return in a moment.
They tell me I just have 15 seconds. What does one say in 15 seconds? Not being spontaneous, I just have to rely upon something that I learned by heart. It is in my heart. Bye now. God love you.